We're also joined by Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Hello, Ian. Hello, Senator.
Senator, we have this situation in Syria where even before the government's suspected use of chemical weapons, tens of thousands of Syrians had been killed using conventional weapons, and yet the U.S. has been wary about arming the Syrian opposition because of concerns about ties to jihadist groups. How does the U.S. reconcile these competing concerns?
The concern is a legitimate one. What began as a popular insurgency by Syrians seeking a better way of life and freedom from the tyrant Bashar Assad has been polluted with jihadi extremists, including al-Qaeda elements, that have poured in over the months now of this conflict. And so now the task of providing support, humanitarian support, and other kinds of support to the Syrian insurgency is complicated by the need to keep weapons in particular out of the hands of the jihadis who have infiltrated what was originally a freedom fight.
Let's go to Scott.
Is there any scenario where you could visualize that there would be American boots on the ground?
The only possibility that I could foresee is if it was required that a multinational force secured and decommissioned chemical weapons sites in a very, very, very minor and specific way, special operations type folks were necessary, and perhaps even special chemicals handling type folks were necessary to make sure that the Syrian chemical weapons stock did not fall into evil hands that would then threaten U.S. interests and perhaps U.S. lives with those chemical weapons. Other than that, I can't see any reason for it.
We've seen these ongoing spending wars in Congress. The Treasury Department has warned that the government might not be able to pay its bills in mid-October. You took part in a Providence Forum last week with Senator Reid where people spoke about the harmful impact of the sequester, but it seems like most Americans aren't really too worked up about the sequester. Does this show that Republicans are winning this battle?
It's hard for me to say that Republicans are winning this battle when they're fighting within themselves so vigorously. You just saw a battle on the floor of the United States Senate between moderate Republicans like John McCain, who want to go to a conference and work out the budget differences with the House, versus the extremists who are filibustering even the process of going to conference to negotiate between the House and the Senate. I don't think that makes them look good. You just saw them fail to pass the Transportation and Housing Appropriations Bill because they didn't have the stomach for the cuts that they wanted once they actually had to apply them to programs. What you are seeing, though, is extremists within the Republican Party who have the ability to threaten things like the full faith and credit of the United States of America and the willingness to engage in that kind of what they themselves call hostage-taking and perhaps having to be willing to so-called shoot the hostage, again using their own terms. When the hostage is the American economy, that does give them a certain amount of leverage. It's a very dangerous and irresponsible use of that leverage.
Where's the end game here for these spending battles, and do Democrats have a strategy for winning this rhetorical fight?
I think the battle is really, a great deal of this battle is taking place within the Republican Party. This is a battle, in some respects, for the soul of the Republican Party between the moderates and the extremists. If the moderates are able to prevail, we will very readily solve these problems and move forward. If the extremists who are threatening to shut down the government, if we don't defund Obamacare, ruin the full faith and credit of the United States, if they don't get their way on the budget, if they prevail, then we have a real problem on our hands.
Should President Obama be negotiating at all over the default?
I think that his best position is simply to say, you Republicans, you folks in Congress, need to raise the debt limit. And I'm not going to negotiate with you on it. And you own it, one way or the other. That kind of pressure will force the more moderate interests in the Republican Party to press back against the extremists. And I think as soon as the Republican Party is controlled by moderates, that everything kind of goes back to normal and we can be sensible again. But there is this extraordinary extremism that has reached a head in the Republican Party.
The 50th anniversary of the March on Washington was celebrated last week, even as Rodin continues to wrestle with persistently high unemployment. We know the unemployment rate is much higher, exponentially higher for black Rhodanders. What can be done to improve that situation?
The economic issues that we face are important. If we can solve the general economic issues, then the rising tide lifts all boats. But there are also a lot of areas where some boats rise higher on these tides than others. We have got to not only fight for a more vibrant economy, but also a fairer economy. The idea that a billionaire hedge fund wizard in Manhattan is paying a lower tax rate than a Rhode Island brick mason is just plain wrong. And the idea that a huge American corporation pays essentially no taxes because they've hidden their intellectual property through schemes offshore is unfair. And if we can't correct those injustices, then we're going to continue to see people who are at the bottom of the economic pyramid and those who aren't as well connected in Washington take it on the chin a lot harder than the big special interests.
One of the big challenges that looks like the country's going to face this fall is the Affordable Care Act, so-called Obamacare. Now, if you look around the country, some states are putting together exchanges in good faith, trying to make this work. Rhode Island, New York, Vermont.
Rhode Island's doing a particularly good job, by the way.
But there are 31 states where the federal government's going to have to come in and actually run the program, and where state government, mainly, again, controlled by Republicans, red states, what have you, where they look like they're basically trying to sabotage it and undermine the whole way that you put this into effect. Is this going to end up with a quilt work across the country where some states actually will have access to these healthcare reforms and other states won't?
I think in the short run, there will be a quilting effect of some states doing much better than others. Rhode Island is going to do much better than many other states. I think you're right. There is an effort at sabotage in some of these states. But you got to remember that the health care plan extended coverage to folks that didn't have it before. And that's happening across the country. That doesn't get crazy quilted. It requires the insurance companies to behave more fairly. That doesn't get crazy quilted. And it helped to reform the way in which healthcare is delivered in a more efficient and sensible way. And that doesn't get crazy quilted. All of that is going forward. The one thing that is going to be subjected to different state levels is this question of setting up a market so that private insurers can compete fairly and regular customers can come in and shop more sensibly.
And giving people
it's
access.
Pretty simple. And gives people access because it's at that place that the subsidy that helps people help their health care affordable comes
in. Half the uninsured people in the country live in three states, California, Texas, and Florida. And it looks like California is moving ahead, but Texas and Florida are really dragging their feet. So what happens to the dream of trying to get everyone health care if you're continuously battling with these states?
The federal government can set up
yes,
these markets, and the private insurers will compete in them. They are competing in them. And so the role of the states to defeat that it's not easy. And particularly when many states are succeeding and people are seeing the benefits, I think states that oppose this are going to end up looking pretty foolish.
Former Vice President Al Gore gave you a shout-out recently in the Washington Post for your efforts to focus attention on global warming and climate change. Gore told the Post that he thinks this issue is approaching a global political tipping point. Is he right?
I think he is right. We're seeing widespread popular support for doing something about global warming and climate change. There's really nobody left but the carbon polluters and their front organizations that deny the science, and their denial of the science is fraudulent. It's propaganda. It's designed to mislead the American public. And I think it's going to be a sad chapter for the Republican Party when everybody looks back and realizes they bought in with the polluters and against the scientists and the public.
Senator Sheldon Whitehouse, thank you for sitting down with us.
Thank you very much, Ian, and thank you, Scott.